Blog Talk Radio.
Installment of the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club, which has taken up residence on the Sisterhood Exchange radio show for the next several weeks. We've been at it for, this is actually the six sessions, because we did a preface and a discussion to lead into the book. So, yeah, welcome to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. I am your very grateful host, Michelle Hollinger, your book club facilitator, and I want to thank you guys again from the bottom of my heart for tuning in on these Wednesday nights for this really fascinating, really empowering, really interesting discussion about sisterhood. And as you know, the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club is based on the paperback version of my book, The Sisterhood Exchange. Let me do a little bit of housekeeping before we get into tonight's discussion. The telephone number, if you'd like to call in with any questions, comments, or brilliant insights, is 646-595-2081. You'll get an indication on your when you call in to press 1 if you'd like to join me on the air. There's a Facebook page that I encourage you to click on the like button on the Facebook page so you can be kept up to date with everything that gets posted on that Facebook page. It's a really fun time for me because I get to post inspirational, motivational, challenging, informative, anything that has to do with sisterhood. Well, you know what, that's not true. Anything that has to do with uplifting, honoring, celebrating sisterhood gets posted on the Facebook page. The other thing that I want to encourage you guys to do is to, on the website for the radio show, to click on that blue follow tab. That makes it really easy for you to be kept up to date with what's going on with the radio show. You'll get a reminder every week, you know, just before the radio show starts. And if there are any changes that I need to make as far as changing the time or doing it on a different day on occasion, then you'll also get that notification as well. So click on that blue follow tab on the website for the radio show. And then, of course, the book is available on Amazon.com. If you want to get it in your hands right away so that you can follow along on the radio show, then I would recommend that you get the e-book, because that's downloadable immediately on Amazon.com. That is for $4.99. And then the paperback is also available on Amazon for, I believe the price is $12 on Amazon. It fluctuates depending on how the sales are going, I think. So it's going to be anywhere between $10 and $12 on Amazon. And then you can also get an autographed copy on my website, which is MichelleHollinger.com. So I think that is all of the housekeeping that I need to do for you all before we get into the book, which again is the paperback version of the Sisterhood Exchange. There's a hardback version, which was published probably a year and a half ago, and it's a really sweet book, awesome book, but God wasn't through revealing some things through me as it relates to sisterhood. When I wrote that book, I thought I was done. I really did. You guys heard me say this before. I really thought I was done when I wrote that book. But when I got ready to publish the paperback, there was just a whole lot more that came through me and onto the page. So the paperback has everything that the hardback does, but it includes a whole lot more. And it's separated into two parts. Part one is the sisterhood of self. Part two is sister to sister. And the idea behind that is that the way that we interact with ourselves, the sisterhood exchange that I have with myself, not only defines my quality of life, but it also determines how I interact with other women. So as within the sisterhood of self, so without, sister to sister. Okay, so that's the gist of the two-part, you know, format for the book. So as I mentioned, we've already done, we've done the preface and we've done several other chapters leading up to tonight's discussion on if we knew then what we know now and how that phrase could really safely be banished from a woman's vocabulary, and it would free up so much energy. Let me just do a real quick recap on what we've done so far. I talked about the sisterhood of self, the SOS, and how as women we're born into the concept of sisterhood. It's just something that's innate within us. Little girls are born just already willing to be friends, already willing to be supportive of each other. Two little girls, you put them in a playpen together, and they don't know anything about gossiping. They don't know anything about backstabbing. They don't know anything about betrayal. Those are learned behaviors. And when I talk in the preface, I talked about how, you know, what little girls are exposed to most plays a huge role in how they view sisterhood, whether they view it as something to celebrate or they view it as something that is full of, you know, all of the low energy negative qualities that go along with that type of sisterhood. I talked about the seven principles of the sisterhood of self, and let me do a brief recap of what those seven principles are. The seven principles are that every woman has an SOS that is either active or inactive, and number two, the second principle is the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence daily. I talk about that a lot, spending time in the silence. We can't become who we are here to become unless we spend time in the silence on a daily basis, because when we're not in the habit of spending time in the silence, then we're preoccupied with external noise. Not just with social media, TV, radio, but with other people's voices about who we are and what we should be doing with our lives. And the wisest voice that you'll ever listen to as it relates to living your purpose is your own, and you can't really tap into your own voice unless you spend some time in the silence, just becoming familiar with what that voice is and allowing it to reveal its beautiful secrets to you. The third principle on the list of principles for the sisterhood of self is that self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS, and it is one of the most beautiful gifts that you can give yourself. Learning how to forgive yourself for mistakes, a poor judgment from the past, frees up so much energy, and we had a real good discussion about that. Principle number four is the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. So once you've gotten into the habit of spending time in the silence to become familiar with your own voice, and then you gift yourself this amazing present of self-forgiveness, then it's also really necessary, it's really incumbent upon you to decide that you will start to pay attention to the words that you use and the thoughts that you think, because they play a humongous role in what you attract into your life. You know, in that chapter, we talked about how your words are really like boomerangs, because what you send out by way of what you speak every single day, you bring back the people and the experiences that describe that your words describe. And so what was going on in our lives is not happenstance, it's not coincidental, it is by design. We design our lives by the way we talk about our lives. We design our lives by the words that we use and the thoughts that we think. Okay? So the next principle is an active SOS thrives in gratitude. And next week is the discussion on gratitude. The chapter that comes after the one that we discussed tonight is the Gratitude Groove. Probably the shortest chapter in the book, but it might be up there with being one of the most powerful, because gratitude is just a game changer, and we talked about that as well. These principles are interwoven into every single chapter, and so you'll hear me talk about, you know, the different principles throughout practically every chapter, because, you know, each chapter builds upon the previous chapter, and it's all just seriously interwoven. So, yeah, I talked, I think a few weeks ago, about just how important and how powerful gratitude is. And I encouraged you guys, if you haven't already embraced it, to consider keeping a gratitude journal. And not only is gratitude a game changer, but when you keep a gratitude journal, it really, like, anchors gratitude as a part of your daily life. Because with the gratitude journal, you know, at the end of your day, what it calls for you to do is to write down at least five things that happened that day that you're grateful for, right? And so when you keep a gratitude journal, you are on the lookout, from the time you wake up until, you know, it's time to write in that gratitude, you're on the lookout for things, you know, for which to be grateful. And the way spiritual law works, whatever you focus on most is what you attract into your life. Where your focus is what expands in your life. So if you're constantly focused on what you're grateful for, you will be attracting into your life more things, more people, more situations for which to be grateful. So the gratitude journal is powerful, extremely powerful. Again, at least five things every day you jot down in that gratitude journal. And, you know, some days I mentioned you'll be challenged to get down just the basic five: food, shelter, clothing, you know, family, friends, whatever. And on some days, and the more you keep a gratitude journal, the more this will happen for you. Some days you won't be able to stop your pen from moving because you had one of those days. And you have them now. You have them all the time. But when we're not in the habit of looking out for gratitude, some of it can slip past us, right? And with the gratitude journal, you put it down in writing. And so not only are you, you know, solidifying it in your life by putting it on paper, in the future when you're having one of those days where you're feeling like, oh shoot, got to write in this gratitude journal, and I hope I can get to five. If you just flip back over some of those pages from previous entries, that'll get your juices revved up. That'll get you moving. That'll get you going, because you know, seeing what you're grateful for has a way of reminding you what you're grateful for, and that you have these things to be grateful for every single day. Okay, so the next principle that is on that list is an active SOS provides access to inner splendor, which reveals life purpose. You guys hear me talk about inner splendor a lot. Each and every one of us has inner splendor. And you tap into your inner splendor in the silence. And the more you spend time in the silence, the more you know, just kind of get into that space within you, that still small voice that has all of that wonderful, beautiful, wise, powerful, just good stuff to share with you. The more that happens, the more you are in a position to allow that inner splendor not to just to rest inside of you, but to express itself, to flow through you, and to become manifest in your life by way of your life purpose. Okay, so the next principle is the quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. And again, the book is separated into two parts because that is absolutely true. The quality of my sisterhood exchange with myself determines how I interact with other women. It determines whether, you know, when another woman excels, it determines how I feel about how she is moving in the world, you know. If I'm in touch with my sisterhood of self, and I've activated it, and I'm doing the work, I'm spending the time in the silence, I've engaged in some self-forgiveness, you know, I've embraced gratitude, I'm writing in that gratitude journal on a regular basis, then when I see another sister doing well, that excites me. That excites me. There's not a jealous bone in my body about another woman doing well. And that's one of the clues to an active SOS. When you find yourself just genuinely celebrating another woman's goodness, another woman's joy, another woman's success, then that's a clue that your SOS is active, alive, and doing what it is designed to do, okay? So I am going to – they gave me a different kind of studio set up on this on my screen tonight, and I'm not sure, but I do believe that – I have a caller who wants to chime in, so I'm going to try this out. The other thing I promised you guys last week was that I was going to activate the chat, and I have. So I'm going to ask you to bear with me because this is the first night that I am actually going to engage the chat room. So, if you are listening online and you want to shoot me a question or make a comment, share some brilliant insight, you can do so through the chat room. I know that you have to have your flash something active, and it's more effective. I think it's easier to access it if you're online, you know, on a laptop or a tablet. But give it a shot. If it works, it does. That's cool. And if it doesn't, then you would just have to call in with your question. And I said last week that I was going to facilitate this chat room, get this chat room up and running for those of you who might be a little bit shy about calling in. So, yeah, if you're listening online and you want to reach out and become a part of this conversation on the air, then you can definitely call in. But if you prefer, you can also try the chat, okay? So let me see what's up with this caller. Okay, I don't think that is. Let's see. Hi, caller, you're on the air. Your name and where you're calling from, please. Okay, so I think that I'm reading that wrong. Okay, so here we go. We are going to talk about this chapter in this book that did a number on me as it came through me. This is one of those chapters where, I surrendered for the entire book. But this is one of those chapters that just did something to me as it came through, because apparently, you know, this at one point was definitely an issue for me, because I spent a lot of time, you know, wishing that my past had been different, spent a lot of time wishing that I had done some things, you know, in a different way, that I had been, you know, more outspoken. I'm going to get into the chapter. But yeah, this chapter blessed me. You know, I wrote it, but as I said to you guys before, this book poured through me, and I took dictation. And this is one of those chapters that taught me a thing or two, and about some things that I needed to know. So, I am going to grab my glasses, although I can see this page pretty good, but I just want to make sure. And then, oh, that's much better. Okay, so I'm going to start this paragraph, this chapter for you. And the name of the chapter, again, is If We Knew Then What We Know Now, which is on page 31 of the book. Okay, so I start out the paragraph with a counterproductive statement, for sure, because it implies that we could have known then what we know now. That's not how it works, and the sooner we accept that truth, the more peaceful our lives can become. I've been guilty of imagining what my life would have been like if only I had been more confident, less shy, more outspoken, less needy of others' approval. Thankfully, I've experienced a much-needed awakening, and I will no longer subject myself to this seemingly harmless, judgmental crap. From now on, when I see articles in women's magazines or Facebook posts asking which two words I would say to my 21-year-old self, I won't have to give it any thought. I am no longer intrigued by the chance to write a letter to my younger self advising her that she coulda or shoulda done anything other than what she did. So the reference to the women's magazines or the Facebook comes because I've seen, I'm sure you guys have too, you've seen Facebook posts, you know, what two words would you say to your younger self, you know, and you see magazine articles and you know, that question asked on different TV shows, talk shows, if you could write a letter or if you could say something to your younger self, what would you say to your younger self? You know, what kind of advice would you give to your younger self? And that all sounds so harmless, and it sounds, you know, whimsical, and, you know, it sounds like it would be beneficial. But when you give it some thought, really, when you really dig down and you really analyze that statement, if we knew then what we know now, first of all, you realize that that's an impossibility. We can't know. We could not have known then what we know now, because that's just not how life works, right? As we get older and we have more experiences and we encounter, you know, different types of people, different hurts, different pains, different joys, different circumstances, we learn different things that, you know, the older we get, the more equipped we become to handle, right? And so when we look at these articles in magazines or we see these Facebook posts asking which two words we would say to our younger self, you know, when you really think about it, it's really, in my opinion, and I'm telling you that I was definitely guilty of it because I have spent my fair share of time critiquing my past, you know, wishing that things were different. But when you really understand that the past is over and done and that there is absolutely positively nothing that we can do to change it, you realize what a waste of energy that statement is if we knew then what we know now. It's really just a waste of time and energy to look back with the intention of you know, giving advice to a part of ourselves that no longer exists. I'm going to keep on reading because this chapter is a powerful chapter. Okay, so I'm still on page 31, bottom of page 31. Looking back on my younger self with advice about what she could have done, what she should have done differently, is not only unfair, it's cruel. It's unfair because it's coming from an older, wiser, more mature vantage point that knows better and is therefore willing and able to do better. My current self, by virtue of simply living, has in its toolbox life lessons, time, experiences, trials, and errors that were unavailable to my younger self. Okay, next paragraph. At 51, all that I can do for my 21-year-old self is Monday morning quarterback, self-righteously observing that if I had taken risks, spoken up for myself, and been more comfortable in my skin, the world was not going to end. But it's really not fair to imply that at 21, I should have known that. It's unfair to gaze back at my world and zero in on what I didn't do instead of honoring what I did. And it's cruel for me to criticize myself when I did the best that I could with what I had. That last sentence in that paragraph, and it's cruel for me to criticize myself when I did the best that I could with what I had. When each one of us is able to embrace that, when we can really just wrap our hearts and our minds around that statement, that we did the best we could with what we had, we did the best we could with what we knew, then we're going to be less inclined to embrace this. If I knew then what I know now, we're going to be less inclined to spend any significant length of time looking back and analyzing and reanalyzing and reanalyzing our past, wondering, you know, if only I had done this differently, if only I had been more this or more that, if only these people in my life had behaved differently. When we realize that the only power that the past has over our life is the power that we give it by reliving it, then we can arrive at a place where we're no longer willing to beat ourselves up, because that's what we're doing, because we can't do anything about it, right? And so to engage in a practice that we have no power to change, first of all, it nurtures this sense of helplessness. It nurtures this sense of victimhood because we can't change it. We absolutely positively cannot change our past. And so to spend a whole lot of time focused on it that way, analyzing, reanalyzing, it really doesn't do us a whole lot of good, right? I'm breathing, you guys. For those of you who might be joining us for the first time this week, deep breathing is an extremely important practice. It goes along with that whole spending time in the silence, engaging self-forgiveness, gratitude. Our breath has such energy and such power in it. And when we're, especially when we're immersed in deep conversations like this with this kind of subject matter, deep breathing just really helps us to remain centered. So you guys will hear me announce sometimes that I'm breathing, or sometimes you'll just hear me take a deep breath, which I'm about to do again. Okay, so back to the book. I'm on page 32, bottom paragraph. It feels like a righteous activity, this return to the past, to analyze and advise. There's a faint familiarity inherent in, quote, if I knew then what I know now, because many of the qualities that are awakening us now were also present within our 21-year-old self, albeit dormant. They were asleep, people. They were asleep. As they awakened within us throughout the years, some on their own, others through pain or awareness, we instinctively realize that they've been inside of us all along, and so we question what we could have done to awaken them sooner. We regret that we weren't wise enough or brave enough to call them forth all those decades ago. But regret is a wasted emotion, is wasted because it feels productive when it isn't. This is one of the things that you will come to discover. You know, the more you spend time in the silence, you will realize that there is just so much wisdom, so much courage, just so much of everything that's good, everything that has its source in the universe. All of that already exists within you, and it's been there all along. It's been there all along, waiting for you to engage it, waiting for you to recognize its existence, and waiting for you to put it into practice, right? It takes sometimes some living for us to arrive at a place where we realize that we have all this stuff inside of us, right? And this is a part of this chapter that when it poured through me, it was very emotional, and it was very powerful, because it makes so much sense. When you recognize that you are a spiritual being having a human experience, and all of these wonderful spiritual qualities exist within you, you don't have to look outside of yourself for any of them. They already exist within you, and they've been there all along. When you realize that they've been there all along just waiting for you, you will understand why it is cruel to look back at your past and wonder, you know, why you couldn't do this, that, or the other back then, because those qualities had not been awakened. Some people are old souls, and they tap into those qualities early in their life, and they're able to live, you know, a different kind of life. And some of us are late bloomers. Some of us realize it much later. Here's the thing. Whenever we realize it, that we realize it is the gift. Whenever we realize it, that we realize it is the gift. And having the courage, once you realize it, once you tap into those qualities, having the courage to say thank you to the past, okay, now I'm going to take what I know, I'm going to take all of these qualities that I've discovered within me, and I'm going to use that in the now, because that's really the only aspect of our lives that we have any control over. We don't have any control over the past, and we don't have any control over the future. We only have control over what's going on right now in our lives. And when we're able to tap into all of that wonderful stuff, and each one of us has wonderful stuff inside of us, when we're able to tap into that wonderful stuff and put it into use to move ourselves forward, to move our lives forward, man, I'm telling you, and I'm speaking from experience, awesome, wonderful, it's going to feel magical. Powerful stuff will start to happen in your life, because all of that is inside of you for a reason. All of it is there because it's a unique aspect of who you are, and the only way for you to discover it is to spend time in the silence, right? And I'm telling you, the more you spend time in the silence, the easier it will be for you to stop beating yourself up about your past. Let me take a breath. One of the things that analyzing and reanalyzing and, you know, wishing that the past is different, one of the things that it does is it keeps you stuck, because Your mistakes and your poor judgment are seen only that way. They're only seen as mistakes and poor judgment. And I'm breathing. One of the things that I'm going to discuss probably in a few minutes is how we can change the kinds of questions that we ask about our past. And just by simply changing the kinds of questions that we ask, it will help us to release the past and to use that energy in a different way. Okay, but before I get to that, I'm going to do a little bit more reading. I'm on page 33, top of the page. Regret is a tool of the ego to keep us stuck. As long as we're writing judgmental letters or giving advice to a part of us that no longer exists, we divert the energy required to step into the fullness of who we are now. And remember, you know, we have no control over the past. We have no control over the future. We only have control over what's going on now. We think we have control over the future. We don't. But what happens now determines our future. So if we are still lamenting our past, if we are still, you know, allowing it to keep us stuck, then it absolutely shades the kind of future that we attract into our lives. Okay? So I'm back to the book. As long as we attempt to make our 21-year-old self responsible for something that she had no life skills to handle, we siphon energy from the only aspect of our life that we can control, the present moment. How do we create the life that we say we want now by judging who we were then? I think I want to let that question marinate, because that thing right there is deep. How do we create the life that we say we want now by judging who we were then? Think about that. Think about it. Okay. More with the book. Looking back on who I was at 21 through my 51-year-old eyes feels innocuous. It feels innocent, you know? What's the harm in writing a letter to my younger self full of sage advice about what she should have done, who she could have been? What may feel like a non-toxic trek down memory lane actually does more harm than good, not to who I was, but to who I am. My 21-year-old self cannot be harmed. She did her part in the evolution of my life, and there is absolutely, positively nothing that she can do with whatever guidance I offer, no matter how brilliant or wise. She can't change a thing. That sums it up right there. You know, that sums up why it's important for us to be willing to change our relationship with our past. And you know what? I say those words, be willing, because sometimes, you know, we're still so stuck. We're still so consumed by the pain. And I want to make sure that you guys understand that I'm not minimizing the pain from your past. I don't intend to ridicule it in any way. If that's where you are, that's where you are. And I cherish you and I honor you for that. But what I'm suggesting is, here's a way that you could actually use your power to shift your relationship to your past. There's a way for it to happen. And again, I speak from experience, because I used to be consumed with my past, used to be consumed by it. It used to definitely keep me stuck. But I am a witness to the power of spending time in the silence. I am a witness to the power of gratitude, making gratitude a regular part of your life. I'm telling you that when you shift your focus from what's wrong with your life to what's right on a daily basis, it's a game changer. It is a major, major game changer. Okay, breathing. Still back to the book, page 33, bottom, second to the last paragraph. The only person who can be harmed by this retrospective nitpicking is my current self, because while this silent lecture conveys poignancy and valor, it is seasoned with remorse while simmering in a crock pot of thanklessness. When I wrote that and I read it again, I said, whoa, who wrote that? I felt like that was one of the times where I was just, like, totally surrendered, and everything was, you know, just pouring through me. It feels innocent. It feels, you know, like, okay, this could be fun to look back on, you know, who I was when I was a teenager, who I was when, you know, when I was in college, when I was a young adult, you know. But, again, when you think about it, what you're essentially saying is, I'm having a huge problem with the person that I used to be. And I am going to devote some time, some precious time from my present moment, from the now part of my life. I am going to devote precious time to analyzing who I used to be. I am going to spend a tremendous amount of my energy looking at what I should have done, what I could have done, and recognizing that there's nothing we can do about it. Who we were in our past, that's done. It's over. It's done and it's over. And I am going to get to these questions later about how we can look at that person and we can develop like this amazing compassion for who we were. We can recognize that we had to be that person in order to be the person that we are now. That person has such tremendous gift, to give to us. And when we change the way we look at that person, we open the floodgates for those gifts to just come pouring through and revealing themselves to us in a really powerful way. Okay, so back to the book. bottom paragraph on page 33. Besides, this backwards glance takes my focus off the here and now. It distracts me from writing a letter to the only aspect of my being that I can actually influence, my current self. So in addition to shifting my retrospective energy from regret to gratitude, I've also decided to forgive myself for engaging in a gesture that felt like it served a noble purpose. I'm telling you all that when I wrote this paragraph, not this paragraph, when I wrote this chapter, it just really did something to me. It was a very emotional, very, very emotional chapter for me to write. And I just know that, you know, some of you are getting something from this. You know what? Let me also add this to you. I wrote this from a 51-year-old's perspective, right? But let me just say that my 21-year-old daughter read this book, and this is her favorite chapter. This is her favorite chapter. When we discussed it, the day that she and I discussed it, I asked her, you know, what was her favorite chapter in the book, and she said, oh, without a doubt, you know, if we knew then what we know now. I said, really? You know, because my assumption was that, you know, women my age, and, you know, 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and older would be the ones to get the most benefit from this particular chapter. But what she said to me was, you know, at 21, you know, she was in the habit of looking at who she was as a teenager and looking at some of the mistakes and the poor judgment that she used. And this chapter helped her to recognize how useless that was. And she said that she was able to look at some of the things that she did with more compassion and understand that when you know better, you do better, and that this particular chapter was amazingly helpful for her. So I'm really proud of this chapter. I'm just – my prayer is that it did for – that it does for any of you who read it what it did for me and what it did for my daughter and what it has done for some of the other women who've read this book. And this chapter right here, the majority of the women who've read the book, they point out this chapter and the chapter on gratitude as the most significant, most impactful in their lives. Okay, so back to the book, page 34. So I forgive my 51-year-old self for judging my 21-year-old self, for not doing more, acting differently, being bolder, wiser, better. I forgive myself for guilt-tripping her inability to peer into a crystal ball to predict the amazingly improved existence that apparently awaited her had she only done this instead of that. I forgive myself for expecting her to behave as though she had already lived for 5 decades instead of 2. I forgive myself for minimizing her accomplishments, for demanding more than she was capable of giving, for forgetting what she endured. I forgive myself for missing the forest of her actual existence because I was blinded by the imaginary trees masquerading as who she could have been. That paragraph right there did me in, because one of the things that we do when we look back at our younger self and you know, we nitpick and we say, oh, I wish I had done this instead of that, I wish I had been more this, that, or the other, we assume that that younger person has all of the knowledge and the wisdom that we at this older age, we assume that she has all of that. But she doesn't. She doesn't. She had a different outlook on life back then. She didn't see everything that we're able to see now, you know. And so to hold her accountable for what we know now, that's not fair, and it's cruel. It's unfair and it's cruel, okay? So I'm back to the book, page 34 again. Forgiving myself opens up sacred space within where gratitude rules and flows freely. It stirs my soul as joyful tears flush judgment from my eyes, bringing into focus the two words that she deserves to hear from me. And people, those two words are thank you. And so if I were to write a letter, it would go a little something like this. Dear 21-year-old Michelle, thank you for your resilience. You experienced more death before your 18th birthday than many people will in their lifetime. Thank you for being a survivor. You were sexually abused as a little girl, but managed to avoid some of the pain-numbing effects of victimization, like drug abuse or promiscuity. Thank you for embracing education and using it to elevate your life. At 21, you were a junior at Florida State University, go Noles, and the following year you graduated with a bachelor's degree in sociology. Thank you for your naivety and gullibility. You had every right to have a hardened shell, but the part of you where your innate sweetness resided was untouched by death, violations, and rejection. Thank you for seeing the good in others, and even when you had to look beyond their behavior to discover it. And thank you for the seeds of strength, courage, and wisdom within you that blossomed into the foundation upon which this 51-year-old woman stands, regret-free and grateful. All my love, 51-year-old Michelle. Okay, I told you that the other paragraph on page 34 did me in. When this letter wrote poured through, that was it. That was, oh, my goodness. And I encourage you all to write a similar letter, thanking your younger self for doing the best she could with what she had. Thanking your younger self for enduring whatever it is that she had to endure. Thanking your younger self for the decisions that she made that made it possible for you to be the woman that you are now. Our younger self, excuse me, did the best she could with what she had. And when we arrive at a place where we can recognize that and we can thank her for it, ooh, my goodness gracious, you will free up so much energy in your life to do what it is you are here to do. You will, oh my God, you will free up so much energy. The other part of writing this letter, this really powerful, beautiful, deserving letter to your younger self, you will, when you get into that space where you want to just examine your younger self and you want to look at all of these wonderful qualities that you may have overlooked because you were wishing that things were different, right? When you get into that space to write that letter, remember, I believe it was last week where I said that as it relates to your inner splendor and your life purpose, your life gives you clues. You are going to come into contact with some of those clues about your life purpose and your inner splendor when you write this beautiful letter, this letter that you deserve to write to yourself. This is one of the most powerful things that you will ever do in your life, to write this letter to your younger self. Not a letter of judgment, not a letter nitpicking, you know, who you were and who you were not, what you did and what you did not do. Okay? The purpose of this letter is to shift the way that you see your past and to recognize, again, that you did the best that you could with what you had. The purpose of this letter is for you to start to see your past from a position of empowerment instead of allowing it to serve as an obstacle to you moving forward with what you are here to do, because you are here on purpose, with a purpose. And looking at your past does nothing, unless you are looking back for clues as to how awesome you were and what a survivor you are and, you know, what you did to survive whatever it is you may have been faced with surviving, okay? When you look back and you draw on that, then, yes, your past can be way more empowering than you realize. But when you look back to beat yourself up, that's just a waste of time. That's just a waste of time. And, you know, if that's been your practice, forgive yourself for that. Forgive yourself for that. Do not allow that to be one more reason to beat yourself up. Okay, I'm going to go back to the book. Actually, let me see if there's any other thing that I want to discuss about that letter. I think that's it with the letter. The letter is pretty, that letter is extremely powerful, and it just really opened my eyes to why I just really needed to stop beating myself up about, you know, not being who I thought I should have been back then. Because I was pretty doggone awesome, and I had to give myself credit for that. And you guys have to do the same thing. Give yourself credit for being as awesome as you were, because you were pretty awesome too. Absolutely, positively were. Let me give the number again in case those of you out there who are listening online would like to call in with a question, comment, or brilliant insight, or talk about, you know, what do you think? What do you think about that phrase, if I knew then what I know now? Is it harmful to, do you consider it to be harmful, or do you consider it to be helpful? The number to call in is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to join me on the air. Okay? Back to the book, page 35. The sisterhood of self mandates that loving all of who you are includes loving all of who you were. It involves looking back only when you are able to do so with loving eyes or to gain some insight that can be used to propel you forward. Beating yourself up for not doing or being more than you are capable of doing or being is like looking at a newborn baby and asking why she's not crawling. Whew, that sentence right there is deep. Let me read that again. Beating yourself up for not doing or being more than you were capable of doing or being is like looking at a newborn baby and asking why she's not crawling. And when she begins to crawl, you wonder what's taking her so long to walk. Looking back at who we were for a perch in life that exists because of what time and experience have shown us is unrealistic. Of course you can see now that everything would have been all right had you tried different things. Of course you can see now, with all of these years of bruised courage and weathered wisdom under your belt, it's really time to accept that you weren't supposed to know it then. You really were not. You experienced what you were capable of experiencing. So instead of lamenting what wasn't, it's time to celebrate what was. So how about writing that letter of gratitude to yourself, your younger self, thanking her for specific qualities, achievements, successes, lessons learned, and anything else that helped you become the woman that you are today. That's homework, you guys. No, really, I really, really, really encourage you to write that letter because it's very empowering, and it really opens your eyes to what you were able to accomplish, when you were younger. It really helps you to see what a big deal it is, and it's something that I really, really encourage you to do. Now, the other thing I want to talk about as it relates to this, if we knew then what we know now, we also tend to, when we look back at our past, we don't just, judge ourselves and beat ourselves up for not being or doing more than we were capable of being or doing. We look at our parents, we look at siblings, we look at other people in our lives, right? And we hold them hostage to the past as well. So one of the things that I want to encourage you to do is to just consider that, as it relates to your parents, to consider that who they became as adults was rooted in what they experienced in their childhood, okay? As parents, we're not given a manual, on how to be a parent. We are not given a manual on how to be a parent. We are human beings, in this parental dynamic, who don't realize that we're really spiritual beings having this human experience. And so we take everything that has happened to us as a human being, and that's how we interact as parents. Do we intend to do harmful things to our kids? And this is coming from a former social worker. My degree, again, is in sociology, and I worked as a social worker, and I've had to deal with parents who did some horrendous things to their children. And even those parents were doing the best they could with what they had. Does that mean that I condone their behavior? Does it mean that I condone a parent being abusive to their child? Not at all. But one of the things that I had to discover, that I had to learn and practice as a social worker, is that people really do only behave based on what they know and what they've experienced. And so it's one of the reasons why, in social work we understand that a huge indicator, a huge risk factor when you're dealing with a parent is if they were abused as a child. Because if there was not some type of intervention to help them to learn that there was a different way, then it's very, very likely that they will grow up to repeat the same behavior, right? And again, I don't condone that, but I understand it. I totally understand it. Okay. One of the things that happens with learning to look at your past differently is you free up so much energy when you are able to accept it for what it was and you no longer feel a need to try to change it. And the reason that you free up this energy is because you can't change it. You cannot change your past. And so to divert all of this energy that you could be using in your present moment to even considering that you could change your past, it takes away from what the energy that you could be using in the here and now to go back to school, start the new business, go out for the audition, you know, anything that, that requires change in your in the here and now, that requires energy. And energy comes with what we focus on. And so if there are things that, that you want to do with your life, you know, if there are goals and dreams that you have that you've not been able to manifest, it would be beneficial to take a look at where you where you're focusing your energy. And if you've been in the habit of, you know, focusing on your past and devoting this tremendous amount of energy to wishing that things were different, then shifting the way that you look at your past will free up this energy in such a way that, you know, you can start to do some of the things. You can start to do the work that is necessary for you to be able to shift your present to what you want it to be. And it's not an overnight thing, and it's not easy. But one of the things that I recognize is that there's no way around doing the work. There is no way around doing the work. There's no way around discovering what we're here to do. There's no way for us to you know, get to this really sacred space in our life where we know unequivocally what we are here to do. There's no way to get to that without freeing up energy that you are currently expending on your past. There's no way, right? So some of the questions I want to encourage you guys to consider, you know, instead of asking, you know, why did this happen, how about asking what strengths did I discover about myself as a result of it? Whatever that painful thing is, instead of asking why did it happen, which even if you get to a point where you understand unequivocally why it happened, to continue to focus on why it happened doesn't gift you with the energy that you need to move forward. Okay? If you ask yourself what strengths did I discover about myself as a result of it, okay, there are tremendous insights and wisdom that will begin to reveal themselves to you as a result of asking yourself that one powerful question. Okay, because implicit in that question is that you do have strengths that came to you as a result of you surviving whatever it is that you survived. If you are within the sound of my voice and you have something horrendous, something painful, something that, you know, has been difficult for you to get beyond, to happen in your past, you are a survivor. You survived it. And now it's time for you to discover the strengths that help you to survive it, and those strengths that continue to exist within you that you can use to move forward with whatever it is that you want to do with your life. Okay? So other questions. Instead of asking yourself, why couldn't I be more? You fill in the blank. Okay? How about asking yourself, what is it about me that makes me unique? What are my quirks and my characteristics that are really pretty damn cool? What are those things about me? Okay, instead of looking at, you know, why wasn't I more of this? Why wasn't it? No, look at who you really are, you really were, right? And it may require that you, you know, examine some of the things that other people may have said about you. Oh, you spend too much time to yourself. Why don't you get out and do this, that, or the other? Or you think that you're this, that, or whatever, okay? Dig deeper into some of those statements. There is hidden treasure there because those things are a part of who you are, right? And when you are able to shift from seeing them as deficits and recognize that they're assets, they're a part of you. They aren't going anywhere. When you can embrace everything about you, you empower yourself to just really stand more fully into your existence. You empower yourself to really just wrap your arms around yourself in such a way that you can't help but to discover your inner splendor and to discover what your life purpose is. There's so much power in shifting the way that you look at your past, so much power. And when you change the questions from why me to why not me, when you change the question from, you know, why couldn't my mother or father be more like, you know, fill in the blank, And you and consider this question instead. What did my mother or father teach me by being who they were? Instead of judging and wishing that they had showed up and been able to be more than who they really were, what did you learn about yourself because your parents showed up in your life and they were who they were destined to be? Changing the question, oh, my God, that's a game changer. That's a game changer. When you look back at your past and you say, okay, now, what is it about my past that I have to be grateful for? Instead of looking back at what was wrong with it, look at what do I have to be grateful for? What do I have to be grateful for my past? And you write that bad boy down, those bad boys down, because you once your pen starts moving with that question, chances are you will not be able to stop it. But it's all about shifting how you look at it. It's all about being open and willing to recognize that your past has way more to offer than you've realized. Breathing here, people. This is some heavy stuff. This is some heavy stuff. And I'm telling you that shifting the way that you look at your past, it reaps, you know, tremendous benefits. There are men who grew up without their fathers who right now are excellent fathers because they decided that they were not going to repeat their father's mistake. They decided that, okay, this is the way I grew up, and I survived it because I'm here, and now, you know, I am going to make sure that the father that my daddy was not for me, the man that my father was, you know, being absent in my life, that's not going to happen with my children. I am going to be, not only am I going to be active in their life, you know, fully present, I am going to be the father that my father was not. A man who takes that perspective can take it to an even higher level if he's able to forgive his father for being that absent parent, for not being present in his life. And being willing to consider that perhaps something happened in his father's childhood that made his father the man that he was. Juwan Strader, the anchor, I'm not going to say which channel he's on because I don't want to get it wrong, but Juwan put on his Facebook post today one of the most powerful messages I have ever seen from a man. And he talked openly and freely about how angry he used to be with his father because his father was not present in his life, and that he used to say that his mother was both his mother and his father. He had has tremendous respect and gratitude to his mom. And he talked about how when he reached a certain age, I think it might have been right before he got married, that he and his father reconnected, that he chose to forgive his father, that his father apologized for not being present in his life, and that he asked his dad to give him away at his wedding, and his dad did. And their relationship transformed into what it had the potential to be. And the reason for his post today is that his dad has had a stroke and I believe some other medical complications. And so he was asking his Facebook friends to please pray for his father. And I'm asking you guys to do that as well, to please pray for Juwan Strader's father, that the healing properties of the universe flow through his life and help him to recover and help that relationship to continue to be the blessing that it has been for Juwan, and that his post is being for the people who read it, because he definitely blessed a lot of people by sharing that personal information on his Facebook page today. Definitely did. And so I'm sharing that story to say, when you get to a point when you are willing to look at your past differently, you can see the gift in your past. And Juwan Strader's post today is an example of that. We have a little bit of time left, so I'm going to give the number again so that if you guys want to call in with questions, comments, or bring your insights, you know I can go all night long on topics like this. So if you want to call in and get your voice in here with this really important discussion, the number to do so is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you'd like to join me on the air. I'm not sure what's up with the chat. I don't know if you guys have tried it. I'm going to click over here and see. I should have done this a long time ago, right? No, nobody's in the chat room, but it's there for you. If you're too shy to call in and you want to get a message to me, you can go to the chat room and I will see it. I think they give me an indication that there's some information for me, that there's somebody in the chat room who wants to chat. So what else did I want to tell you guys about this chapter? Yeah, if you don't already have the book, I really encourage you to get it, if not for any other chapter, especially this one. There are other chapters that are extremely powerful, but this one is just, I think, just such a huge blessing because it really makes a whole lot of sense. It really helps us to understand why, you know, having the kind of relationship with our past that keeps us stuck, that we have the power, number one, to change our perspective, to change the way we look at our past, and that when we're able to do that, you know, we just free up a lot of energy. We free up a lot of energy. The other thing I want to say, too, is if, you know, you've had events in your past that are still causing you pain and they're still keeping you stuck and blocking your growth, I would strongly consider, you know, getting some work with a therapist. I recommend therapy wholeheartedly. I have seen, you know, more than one therapist in my life. And what a therapist can do is to be a neutral person who's not emotionally attached to your story, and they can see it objectively. They can look at the big picture, and then, you know, if they're skilled, they can help you to start to look at it from a different perspective. A therapist can help you to walk around the elephant and see it from somebody else's point of view. They can help you to see what a survivor you are. They can help you to see, you know, that there's nothing that you can do to change who you were back then. There's nothing that you can do to change what happened to you. There's nothing that you can do to make your parents into, you know, different people and for you to change any of your circumstances. A therapist can help you to develop a huge amount of compassion for yourself, to develop this ability not to beat yourself up for past mistakes, for poor judgment. A therapist can help you with a whole lot as it relates to moving forward with your life. You know, we have this stigma in certain communities about seeking out the help of a therapist, and I am here to say that you do yourself a huge disservice by not considering, you know, working with a therapist if you feel like, you know, if you feel like a therapist would be beneficial. Don't let, you know, what other people consider what other people consider about therapy, don't let that determine whether you get that help or not, because it can be life changing. It really can. So yeah, tonight's topic: if we knew then what we know now, I think that phrase should be banished. And, you know, whether you're at that point now where you can banish it or not is up to you. But doing the work is such a gift to yourself. It's an amazing gift to yourself to do the work where you get to the point where your past empowers you and no longer serves as an obstacle. And that's what this chapter really is all about. You know, it's really about looking back at who you were and really trying to be objective about it, you know. Taking the emotion out of it and looking at, you know, make a list. What did I accomplish as a teenager, as a young adult? Write down everything that you accomplished, you know. Look at what you were able to do instead of beating yourself up for what you were not able to do. Look at the quirks, the personality traits that are uniquely who you are, because when you can accept every single aspect of yourself. I used to beat myself up because, like, at meetings at work, you know, a long time ago, I wouldn't speak up, and I used to beat myself up for not speaking up. But it's just not in my nature to speak up. I like to listen and, you know, get an informed position before I share. And, you know, my daughters tell me that I say way too many words in my life now. But I'm the kind of person who speaks when I have something to say. But a long time ago, even if I did not have anything to say, I would beat myself up because I thought I was supposed to, you know, share whatever in a meeting. And that you know, it has its benefits. There are pros and cons to speaking up in a meeting, especially depending on, you know, who you're working with. But if it's not a part of your personality, if it's not a part of what feels comfortable for you to speak up, getting to a point in your life where you accept that and you no longer beat yourself up, man, you do yourself a huge favor with that. Huge, huge favor. The other thing, too, is when you're that kind of person, you know, you're kind of quiet and you don't speak up in meetings. When you do speak up and when you get to a point in your life where you recognize that, you know, you speak up when you have something to say, people are more inclined to listen to what you have to say. When you just talk just for the sake of talking, some of what comes out of your mouth might not make all the sense, you know, that you think it does. So I digress. I'm talking about myself there big time. Yeah. I speak when I have something to say. And these days, as you can tell, I have a whole lot to say. Whole lot to say. I guess I better have a whole lot to say if I have a radio show, right? All right. So we have a few minutes left. I see that you guys are not going to be calling me. But that's okay. That's okay. My daughter and I talked about this. I said, you know what? I have to be okay with people simply listening. Sometimes they don't want to share, and that's cool. But just in case you do, the number is 646-595-2081. I'm going to save this chapter, this next chapter, for next week, because I think that tonight's chapter is just so full and so rich, and I really want you guys to just really let it marinate, to really think about it. You know, if you don't have the book, you can get the ebook from Amazon.com. You can get it in Kindle form, and the cool thing about that is whether you have a Kindle or not, they have a Kindle app that you can download, and so you can access the book on any device that you have. So that's only $4.99. The paperback. I like paperbacks. I'm an old school reader. I like having my book in my hand so that I can write in the margins and I can highlight, you know, statements that jump out at me. But that's just me. You can still, you know, do the ebook version. And then if you want to have your book autographed, you can get it from my website, which is Michelle Hollinger, M-I-C-H-E-2-L-E, Hollinger, H-O-L-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And, yeah, I will get that autographed copy out to you. So next week we're going to be talking about the next chapter, which is the Gratitude Groove. Again, one of my favorite chapters, one of the shortest ones in the book, but it's probably, you know, one of the most powerful, because I talked to you guys about how just amazing gratitude is. And when you make an intention to embrace gratitude in your life, it's a life changer. Huge, huge, huge life changer. So if you guys don't have any questions or comments about tonight's chapter, I am going to sign off, because I think I've said all that I can say. You know what? That's a lie. I can say a whole lot more, but I don't want to become repetitive and, you know, beat you over the head with it. I think that I've said enough on tonight. You know, the biggest lesson I think that can be taken away from this chapter is that we really deserve to cut ourselves some slack as it relates to our past. We really deserve to shift the way that we look at our past, understanding that we have no power at all to change our past. And the more we look at our past from a position of blame and guilt and judgment, the more energy we consume, you know, energy that could be used to devote to our present moment and to move our lives forward. Because that dash in the middle of our birth and our death, that's the part that we have control over. We don't have control over our birth. We don't have control over our death. That dash in the middle, that's our life. What we do with that dash determines the quality of our life. It absolutely determines the quality of our life. And we all deserve to live our lives as fully as we possibly can. Shifting the way that we look at our past, it oof, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's all that I'm going to say on that tonight. And I want to thank you all again from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. And I'll be with you again next week, Wednesday night at 7:30 for the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. And we have, let me see, we have 1, 2, 3 more chapters in part one of the book. And then we'll be shifting to part two, which is Sister to Sister. So without... that chapter starts off with a beautiful poem called the Sisterhood Exchange, and then we get into some really cool stuff that really builds on the first part, you know. So everything that I've covered in part one and that I will cover over the next few weeks in part one, it sets part two up beautifully. It just really helps us to see what a gift sisterhood is, and just how beautiful it can be when we set, you know, a different kind of intention for it. It can just go to an entirely different level. So before I start talking any more about this chapter, I am going to bid you guys a good night. I think that's it. So yeah, thank you for hanging out with me, and I'll be here again next week for the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club on blogtalkradio.com/the Sisterhood Exchange. So have a wonderful Wednesday and a fantastic weekend. Talk to you next week. Peace.